Welcome to this episode of the Reverse Alzheimer's Summit. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Sandison, and I can't wait to introduce you to Purity Coffee and Andrew Salisbury, the founder and CEO of Purity Coffee. He began his unique relationship with coffee when his wife, Amber, was suffering with her own health condition. She had generally diminished vitality and energy, and they spent much of their time improving their lifestyle through clean diet and daily exercise. So you can see how aligned he is with our entire message here at the Reverse Alzheimer's Summit. But today we're going to dive in to why caffeine and coffee, and particularly Purity Coffee, can be so helpful for cognitive decline. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's get into a little bit more of why you guys started Purity Coffee and how it's different from other coffee brands.
Yeah, so I mean, basically the story of how Purity started is that my wife was having some health issues, and it really sort of manifested in low energy, difficulty to get out of bed in the morning. I'd been in a very, very different business before, which I'd sold. It was a software company in Latin America. Couldn't be more different. And we spent some time traveling, and I think that was stressful on her for a couple of reasons. But anyway, cut a long story short, when she got back, she was getting some real health issues, low energy, and she was, like a lot of us do, drinking a lot of coffee. And as you can probably tell by my accent, I'm English. I was a tea drinker. I was never really a big fan of coffee. And so we'd have plenty of arguments where I was trying to persuade her to give up coffee and just sort of, because I felt like she was putting one foot on the accelerator, one foot on the brake. Like her body wasn't capable of getting the level of energy that coffee made her feel like she had. Cut a long story short, we had a few arguments about this, and I started to get educated about coffee and health. And what I found out was actually that my wife was right. I had to eat some humble pie on that one. But coffee is incredibly good for you if it's done right. And so I met two professors at the Institute of Coffee Studies in Vanderbilt University, and they gave me a long shopping list of things that you probably are aware of, like that coffee can help with prevention of type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, dementia, some various heart diseases, 6 forms of cancer, liver health. So there was just a long shopping list of the health benefits of coffee. But at the time, I asked them, well, who's doing the very best job? Who's making all of those decisions based on health? And they could tell me all the things that were the difference that make the difference. In other words, they could tell me what to look for in a coffee, but they couldn't tell me where to buy that coffee. And so I just started a research project with Professor Adriana Farrar, who's a doctor from the University of Brazil, and she heads the lab for nutrition at the University of Brazil, which is obviously one of the biggest coffee producers in the country. And we started working on a project, which is, if we made every decision based on health without compromise to money, to taste, to anything else, what would the coffee look like at the end of the project? And so we worked on that for about 18 months, and that was really the start of Purity.
Wow, how exciting. So yeah, let's go into some of those health benefits. Mm-hmm. I have certainly seen my patients, they are more cognitively engaged. They have more energy when they are exposed to a little bit of caffeine. And now, of course, you mentioned tea. There's multiple ways to get to that. And there's a nootropic formula that I use with almost all of my cognitive decline patients, which is oral caffeine. It contains some oral caffeine. So we know that there's a connection between cognitive function and caffeine. Now tell me a little bit more specifically about antioxidants and why maybe we should deliver that caffeine as coffee.
Yeah, and there's been lots of interesting studies done using caffeine, and even using caffeine that came from, let's say, Swiss water that was generated from coffee by itself to see if it had the same impact as caffeine from coffee, and it doesn't. That's the really interesting thing. The way I would describe coffee is I think it's almost like an orchestra. There's multiple things playing at the same time. There's no one instrument that you could say causes all of the benefits. And so one of the things that we focus on is a thing called chlorogenic acids, which are the polyphenol that coffee is one of the richest sources of polyphenols and antioxidants in the American diet. But what's really interesting is the amount of antioxidants that you get in your cup depend on a lot of factors. It depends on soil conditions, the variety of the coffee that you're using, the cultivar of the coffee you're using, sunlight, rainfall, the way that the coffee is processed, the way that it's stored, and all these things impact the amount of CGAs that are in your cup in the end. So what we try to do is make every decision based on health without any compromise to maximize the antioxidants in the coffee, but then also make sure that we don't have any of the negative things that occur in coffee that can happen with poor processing.
Fascinating. So I was sharing with you before we jumped on this call that I am not a coffee drinker, although I am a proponent because I see the benefits for my patients. My mom has been drinking Purity coffee whenever she is at my house, thanks to you guys. And she has said to me multiple times when she's here, she takes her first sip in the morning and she says, oh, this is so better, so much better than the consistently mediocre or sub, you know, below average thing that I can get anywhere else in the world. I love coming to your house and having the coffee here. But what makes that difference? It tastes different. Like you can taste the difference. But also you were explaining to me why maybe I should reconsider my resistance to coffee and why maybe your coffee won't give me the jitters that other coffee has in the past.
Yeah, so this was one of the unintended consequences of making every decision based on health. We didn't actually know at the end of it if the coffee that we delivered would be sort of like a fish oil. In other words, you trust the vendor, you think they're doing a really good job, but you really can't tell the difference between one capsule and another. You just have a level of confidence. And then we found within about a year or so, people were reporting just things that we didn't expect. They were reporting, you know, lack of the side effects that typically come from coffee, which means, you know, like acid reflux or nervousness, or we all know that feeling when you've drunk just a little bit too much coffee and you're like, okay, I've got to stop coffee. Often that's a result of poor quality coffee. And the way that coffee is farmed, there's a lot of motivation on the financial areas to cut corners because it's being paid as a commodity. And because it's being paid as a commodity, people are saying, or farmers and also importers are saying, look, you know, if we cut the corners, we make higher margin and the customers don't really know. So I think we were the first company, I know we were the first company to make every decision based on health without compromise. And that led to things that we were actually surprised to find out, you know.
That's incredible. And then the taste, can you comment on why the taste is so different?
It shouldn't be. I mean, it shouldn't be in the sense that, in other words, the cultivars of coffee that we use are the same as the cultivars of coffee that other people use. But what we care about is we care about the way that the coffee is farmed. So first, it's avoiding the bad stuff. So it's avoiding things like, you know, pesticide residue has to be organic. It has to be specialty grade. So some of the problems with taste with coffee come from the fact that you have a coffee that's substandard. Like specialty grade is the highest grade of coffee. And what that means is there's actually a measurement of specialty grade, which is that you look at the green coffee and you look for things called primary and secondary defects in the coffee. So you're looking for things that show the coffee was damaged in the process. So in other words, there's things like there's overripe beans. So if you take a coffee tree and you pick overripe cherries, or if you have industrial farming that picks all the cherries at the same time, then it's like putting a moldy strawberry in a vat of fresh strawberries. I mean, you're going to get mold very, very quickly. So there's a lot of things that potentially could impact the flavor, but typically it's quality related.
Got it. And so let's talk, you mentioned mold. Mm-hmm. Mold is something that I have seen over and over again. Mold exposure, particularly mycotoxin exposure in my patients, leads to cognitive decline very quickly. Yeah. And foods and coffee in particular are one of the things that come up over and over again as a potential exposure source if it's not in your environment. Yeah. So I know you guys have been very thoughtful about how you think about, again, harvesting the beans and whether or not there's mold in there and just having a really high standard. Can you talk through the process of avoiding that in Purity coffee?
Yeah, and avoiding is the key word. Once mold has developed on the coffee, it's very, very difficult to sort for it. So in other words, avoiding it in the first place is crucial. So there's a lot of places that mold can form on coffee, all the way from, you know, you have these pickers who are taking the coffee cherries and they're putting them in a big burlap bag and they're putting it by the side of the road to be picked up by a truck. If it's not picked up within an hour or 2 hours, you've got rotting fruits, which sometimes is left for days on the side of the road until they pick them up. And so you've created this mold inside of your coffee right from day one. In processing of the coffee, you know, the moisture level makes a big difference. So, I mean, I remember once being at a big farm, big industrial farm in Brazil, and I saw this just mound of green coffee, unroasted green coffee. And there was a farm worker who was just spraying the coffee with water. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. What is that, a cleaning stage, or what is that final stage? And they said, well, no, it's not really. We're allowed a certain amount of humidity to the coffee. So the more we can make it close to that humidity level, the more we can actually charge for the coffee, because it's by weight as a commodity. Of course, what they're doing is they're spraying it with water, then putting it in bags, and they're shipping it overseas. So there's lots of, I mean, there's lots of examples, unfortunately, where mold can develop. I mean, one example, and this is, you know, from the same very large industrial farm, the way coffee is picked in an industrial way is they have these big sort of tractors that almost have this sort of U-shaped sort of cradle that goes between the trees. And what it's doing is it shakes the coffee trees. So all of the cherries that are ripe, unripe, and ready to be picked are shaken to the ground and then picked up automatically, and then it's sorted. The problem is, if something is overripe, like cherries on a tree ripen at different degrees, if you hand pick and hand select, you're only going to pick the ones that are just red and perfectly ripe. But if you have a machine sorter, it's basically sorting them all, and then you're trying to figure out how to avoid the ones that were moldy, contaminating all the other ones. And the very last thing I'd say, though, quickly about this, and which is the misconception about coffee and mold, it's not the mold that really creates the problem. It's the mold that is the food for the mycotoxins that create the problem. So you may not see it in your coffee. You're not going to see, you know, coffee that looks moldy, and, you know, you're going to see coffee that looks normal to the naked eye. But the reality is that mold that has been on the coffee in the early stage has sort of like added to the mycotoxins and ochratoxin A and mycotoxins like that.
Got it. So you referenced some research and some people who you've worked with both in Brazil and in the United States who are researchers, medical professionals. Tell me what you've learned from them and how you've incorporated this into creating your products.
I think one of the big advantages that I had is just sort of like a position of ignorance. I mean, when I first came to coffee, I really had no idea whatsoever, and I had a blank sheet of paper. I could look at it with expert help and say, what happens if we made every decision based on health? And we got some really good guides. Dr. Adriana Farrar, we've had Dr. Sanjeev Chopra, who was the last dean of admissions for Harvard Med School. A lot of these people collaborate with us. We work with three universities now. What we're trying to do is we're trying to sort of push the limits of where coffee can be in terms of a health food. So a lot of it is just being guidance from them, where, you know, they started off, and Adriana started off, you know, explaining to me, look, it's a compromise of two things. You want to avoid the bad stuff, but the bad stuff is not the thing that makes it healthy. In other words, my cigar could be an organic cigar, but it's not necessarily good for me. What's good for me is, you know, all the positive compounds in coffee. And so, so avoid the bad stuff, the mold, the mycotoxins, heavy metals. In the roasting, you can create a thing called acrylamide, and you can create a thing called PAHs, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, when you over roast coffee. So in other words, we can create bad stuff in the coffee all the way through the process if we're not paying attention to it. But what really matters is the CGAs and the antioxidants in the coffee. And that is based on soil conditions. That's based on farming practices, which are very close to it being farmed in its natural habitat.
Okay, so take us through the life of a bean that ends up in a bag in my house or someone else's house.
Yeah, well, it starts, the very first step is it has to start with lab testing coffee from around the world that's highest in antioxidants. So that's one step no other coffee company does. So the first thing we do is we know that the amount of CGAs in coffee will vary from crop to crop, harvest to harvest. The only way to find out which is higher in antioxidants is to lab test the coffee. So we pick, so almost like king of the castle, we look for the very best, highest CGAs in the green coffee. Then as a criteria, and even before we lab test, the coffee has to be organic. It has to be special to grade, and it has to be, we look for certain labels like hand-picked, hand-selected, shade-grown, Smithsonian bird-friendly. So all of those things you would think like, ah, is that just about taste? Is it about quality? They're labels that allow us to know that the coffee was grown in its natural conditions. So for example, if it says Smithsonian bird-friendly, it means that migratory birds land on those coffee trees. They won't land on those coffee trees if they're industrially farmed in just rows of trees. They won't want to put their nests there. So we're looking for monikers like Smithsonian Bird Friendly because it shows us that the coffee is grown in its natural environment. And the reason why that matters is coffee that's grown in its natural environment has better soil conditions, and therefore the coffee is higher in CGA. So bottom line, organic, specialty grade, has to be hand-picked, hand-selected. And then what we do is we design, when we pick that particular coffee, we buy pretty much all of their harvest for 2 to 3 years. So unlike other coffee companies, we're not sort of like saying, let's give variety to our customers and have 50 different coffees. We find the highest and the very best quality coffee for health, and we buy up all of the coffee that we can that reaches that standard. So that's the very first step. And then afterwards, when the coffee is then transported to us, we design a roast curve with the University of Brazil to maximize the antioxidants and not create any of the negative compounds. And then finally, freshness is important in the coffee. So our coffee and your coffee is sent maybe 2 days after roasting, 3 days after roasting. So it's still degassing. So it's very, very fresh, and it's going to be higher in antioxidants, but also the lipids on the coffee won't be stale, which is some of the problems. The lipids are the oils on coffee, like cafestol and caweol, and what they do and unfortunately in coffee that is more than 15 days old, they start to turn rancid, and that's sort of obviously one of the reasons why people have stomach issues.
Okay, so that got the coffee bean to my house. Mm-hmm. Now that it's here, how do I make it into the perfect cup of coffee?
We've actually been struggling with that final mile question for a while, which is that we can do everything right. We can make every decision based on health. But then if the final mile, let's say you use boiling water, you can actually impact the coffee. If you're doing things that in terms of processing, like espresso is a very good way of making the coffee. Paper filter is a good way. But if you use paper filter, you trap the cafestol and the caweol in the paper filter. So that's weird. If you use this espresso, you don't. If you're concerned about lipids or oils or cholesterol levels, you may want to use a paper filter. So I guess the bottom line is for me is that we don't focus much on the way that you make the coffee, because people can have their own preferences. But you're ahead of the pack here. We've just come out with this thing, which is our coffee in a soluble. And it's going to be released in about 2 months. And that allows us to start doing single serves where we can say, look, our coffee in a soluble, you can take one package, you can put it in, best cup of coffee you've ever had. And we'll be able to compare it to kale and to blueberries and all these other things that are high in antioxidants.
Oh, wow. So, and this would be like very practical for travel and things like that, right? Okay. And would that be like just add water sort of situation?
That's the crazy thing. It's taken us about 2 years to develop this, and it really is just add water and you will be amazed. It'll be as good as a pour over coffee, because we cold brew the coffee first and then we create the soluble coffee. So you're fully extracting all the positive compounds in the coffee and the flavors.
Okay, so then does that mean you're a fan of cold brew? Is that something you would recommend doing?
Yeah.
And then what about creamers? Do you have opinions about the creamers that people add to their coffees?
I think if you drink really good quality coffee, you don't need a creamer or sugar. I think that's one of the problems with, you know, the big chains of coffee companies. Their coffee is really horrible. And the reason it's horrible is because they over-roast the coffee, because they want the coffee, wherever you try it in the world, in Singapore and Seattle, they want it to taste the same. So they've got a challenge, which is that, you know, that coffee is a natural food product. How do you make it uniform? You burn the hell out of it and it's going to taste the same, you know? So,
Maybe that's the difference in taste.
Yeah.
And so then When you have sort of a range of different, are they flavors? Are there types? What are the differences in the products that you have?
Yeah, we won't make a decision to take on another coffee or to have another product unless there's direct health benefits to the product we take on. It's nothing to do with flavor. I mean, even though, you know, I think honestly I'm biased, we have one of the best tasting coffees in the world. It's not about the flavor. It's about every decision based on health. And so, you know, all of our SKUs of coffee have a health reason. So we started with Flow. We went to then Calm. Flow is a very high antioxidant coffee. Then we went to Calm for a decaf version. And then it was about 2 to 3 years before we released Ease. And that's because the science sort of started to develop around a thing called chlorogenic lactones. So chlorogenic acids are the antioxidants in coffee. And as you roast the coffee a little bit darker, it creates a thing called chlorogenic lactones, which are very good for stomach health and also the blood-brain barrier. And so it's been shown to have very positive effects and one of the sort of contributors for things like Alzheimer's, dementia, and the reduction of that risk. So that was one of the reasons why we introduced Ease. And then over about a year and a half ago, we introduced Protect with the help of Sanjeev Chopra, which is to sort of bring awareness to coffee and liver disease and the impact coffee has on healthy liver.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because toxins come up a lot in the world of Alzheimer's. My mentor, Dr. Bredesen, also a co-host of the summit, he describes the 6 kind of different types of Alzheimer's and these different pathways you can take to get there. And one of them is the toxic type. So that liver support is really, really beneficial if that's your path, so to speak, that you took to getting dementia. Now, I also want you to speak a little bit more to if you were someone who was struggling with cognitive decline, which one would you pick just for cognition? It sounds like this hope version is really, if you have that type 3 Alzheimer's, might really support the liver. And maybe you go back and forth each day.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think what's important to understand here is that we want to encourage people to drink more, better quality coffee, whether it's Purity or another brand, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's what matters is that the studies on coffee that really have been done since the 50s, over 25,000 studies on coffee and health, show that coffee has a really profound impact on the liver. And one study just recently came out that shows that for every cup of coffee from the baseline, so let's say you drink one cup of coffee and you move to 2, that has a 20% increase in or lower risk of developing fatty liver, liver cirrhosis, or end-stage liver disease for every cup of coffee you consume. So, you know, why I think it matters is people should pay attention to quality of coffee that they drink and just look for coffee that's high in antioxidants, you know, and they could find it in a lot of different places. It doesn't, you know, I mean, I'm biased. I think that we do the best job, but really drink more coffee.
Yeah. Certainly sounds like you're committed to doing the best job. So talk a little bit more about how Purity Coffee is working with supporting Alzheimer's research and advocacy.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, originally this came about for me as my awareness came about because my wife's father died from Alzheimer's and complications. And it was just, you know, awful for my wife, obviously. But beyond that, one of the frustrations that she had is that, you know, I remember the conversations where she's saying, why do people not know about this? Why do they not know that things that they do every single day, and in a lot of cases, they're trying to give up. I mean, I'm so frustrated when I hear people, you know, want to give up on coffee. And you're like, well, you know, don't give up. Just improve the quality of your coffee because, you know, it has so many profound effects on health. And it's probably one of the healthiest things you can drink. So there's a twofold focus on this. One is awareness. We were trying to increase awareness about coffee and Alzheimer's and coffee and liver and coffee and heart, and just sort of that it can be a very effective health food. One is awareness, and the other is following the science to do the best practices that we think are published about what's the difference that makes the difference, what should we be focused on. And, you know, a part of the problem is this, that we will, I don't know if we will never know, but it's a very, very difficult, it's very difficult to do sort of in vivo studies on coffee and health, to take, you know, 500 people and say, you're never going to drink coffee and you're only going to drink this coffee. And then you're going to drink it in this method and then track the results. So A lot of them are observational studies, but they're so well supported and they're such large studies. In the case of the nurses study, millions of people that have been tracked over 25, 30 years. So, you know, we may not know exactly the difference of our best practices, but a lot of it is anecdotal. You know, people who report to us that they have, you know, different outcomes than they would normally.
Yeah, and I would even offer a lot of it's common sense, right? And or experiential, kind of what you're describing is people report that they have better cognition, better focus, better mental clarity, better mood after having some caffeine or having a little bit of coffee. So, and I don't, there's not always a risk to that, right? And I think that's part of your message is that this can be a really healthy ritual. And I certainly encourage people to tie that morning cup of coffee or even tea to a meditation practice or to some a gratitude practice, an act of kindness, maybe even a prayer practice, something that feels really nourishing, not only in terms of, you know, calories or taking something in through your mouth, but spiritually and in terms of community and mental health. So I think just having something, especially to sip that and feel like you're taking in something really healthy for you, having that mindset that it's almost like a medicine. Food is medicine, right?
That's our tagline. We have, you know, food is crossed out. It says, let coffee be their medicine, Hippocrates, and then purely coffee underneath. You know, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, that's my position as well. And I think your point, your point's a really good one. One is the food that we ingest and the other is the manner that we ingest it. And, you know, it's sort of like to have that moment, that calm in the storm when you're just first thing in the morning, you're having your sort of like what my wife and I call the purity huddle, which is just sort of like that first hour in the morning, you talk about your day. I mean, it's a very important ritual. And I think that, you know, has a real impact, you know. So
yeah, it really does. Well, Andrew, this is just such an exciting thing to discuss because as I mentioned, you know, people are so attached to their coffee. And so reframing it in a way that this can be really healthy, really pure purity coffee, and then also kind of attached to these other healthy rituals and community or relationship, I think is a really exciting thing to just sort of put the bug in people's ear that this is something that can be super, super positive and healthy.
Especially because if you think that, you know, 64 million Americans will wake up tomorrow morning and have a cup of coffee. Now, some of them might be considering quitting and others are not drinking the best quality coffee in the world. A 2-degree shift where you just pay a little bit of attention to something you do every single day is going to have more of an impact than trying to, let's say, introduce wheatgrass into your diet or doing something that, you know, with the best of intentions, we can do all that. But, you know, we sort of joke that the coffee is the supplement you never forget to take.
Right. That makes a ton of sense. And I've said this over and over. People will remember this from other talks on this summit, but it's really those decisions that we make every day, those decisions about what we put in our mouth, what time we go to sleep, you know, how we prioritize movement. These are the things that change the trajectory of our health over decades, right? These decisions that we make, the habits that we form, those are the things that really have an impact. It's not that blockbuster drug that we're waiting for. It's these small decisions we make every day that add up over a lifetime and determine the outcome of our health and our brain. And yeah. Purity coffee feels like a no-brainer, pun fully intended.
I agree with you completely. I think we prioritize vertical time over horizontal time, meaning like, what can we do in 24 hours? We're going to go to the gym for the first time, and you know, in the last couple of months, all is what we can do in the next week or 2 weeks, rather than what can we do over the next 2 years? That what's the one behavior that we're going to change today that's going to be a consistent change that will reflect in, you know, 2 to 3 years? I think that's much more powerful.
It really is. Yeah. Those small changes that lead to a big change over time. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure, Andrew. Please tell everyone where they can find out more about you and Purity Coffee.
Go to puritycoffee.com, and it's pretty deep site in terms of like the blog posts and the studies that are available. We have an amazing team on customer service. If there's any area of interest that you want to dig down into, we've got all the resources to do that, because, you know, education is a big part of what we're focused on. And it's there's an education gap, I think, about, you know, coffee and health. And the more we can bridge that gap, I think the more impact we can have on health because people do coffee every single day, you know.
And I'm just so curious, where does the coffee typically come from? Is it Central America? You mentioned Brazil. Is all of it from Brazil? Where is all your coffee coming from?
So what's interesting is we buy coffee from Brazil, from Colombia, from Honduras, all that's based on the highest in antioxidants. But what we've just done about a year and a half ago is we bought our first farm in Colombia. And we did that because one of the problems with coffee is, as it's a commodity, people don't do all the things necessary to look at coffee and health. And one, because no one is buying coffee based on health, no one on the farming level is making the decisions. So we bought this farm in Colombia so we could make decisions on the soil level with additives, with different things that we can do with cultivars of coffee, so that we can start sort of like pushing that envelope of coffee and health. And this, we'll have our first harvest in a couple of months. So it's going to be really interesting when we do all the lab testing, you know, to see the results of all the things that we were doing.
How exciting. Congratulations to make that move and just have control, have like full control of, yes, the soil, all of those components. That sounds like a super exciting move. And I hope that that's just the beginning of a shift in that direction of taking over more and more coffee. Because I'm sure, you know, you mentioned the birds and the soil. It's not just the coffee, right? You're taking care of an entire ecosystem. And so having less of that kind of monocropping and pesticides and herbicides sprayed won't just support the people drinking the coffee, but probably the people in those communities where the coffee is grown as well.
Well, and I know this isn't, you know, the topic of conversation, but I would leave you with one thing I think is really interesting, which is that coffee that is farmed in the right way is good for the environment. In other words, it sequesters carbon from the atmosphere if it's regeneratively, organically farmed. And we use things like, there's a concept called biochar, which is activated charcoal you put on the ground and actually pulls carbon from the atmosphere and puts it in the soil. But industrial farming releases carbon into the atmosphere. So, I mean, there should be more of an awareness that coffee that is good for your health is also good for the environment.
That's what we see over and over again. When we consume things that are good for us, they typically are things that are good for the environment. Absolutely. When we're exposed to things that aren't so good for us, they typically aren't good for other living creatures either, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, it's just such a pleasure getting to know you. And I'm so excited to be trying more Purity coffee. My mom is a fan. The people in my life who drink coffee are fans. And I think that this conversation might have just tipped the scales. So thank you so much for your time and your support. It's been an absolute pleasure.
For me too. This has been great.